As you, all right, I think we can start. As you probably know, about 6 or 8 months ago, a group of poets began giving readings. They were called read-ins by the press, but they were really poetry readings against the Vietnam War. And this is only natural, too, since that whole area surrounds us like a cloud. Pretend the cloud is not there would be as stupid as living in nature and pretending there were no trees there. So the strange thing is that the poets themselves were aware that read-ins against the war are not going to change the United States policy. I think Johnson has decided to go for a military victory at any cost. But the problem has something to do with the self-respect, not only of the poets, but of the people in the colleges. And there's something bad about having to listen on the radio all the time to lies about the war. We know countries who have had to do that. France is one at the time of the Algerian War. All the news media of France said we had a statesman in Algeria. They really want us there. They do. Here, I'll produce them. They produce an Algerian. They said, you want us to be in Algeria? Yes. Yes, we do. Please help us. But of course, it was all lies. And when the French boys were there fighting, they knew it was a lie. They knew that they were fighting against the whole Algerian nation, which was sick of the Westerners and wanted them out of there. So I was in Paris last year, and something very sad has happened to the French men. There's this feeling of nothingness there, this feeling of having fought and killed men and tortured men for nothing, absolutely nothing. Because what happened? Of course, they had to get out. And it only took one strong man, De Gaulle, who came along and said, look, it's all a mistake, it was all stupid, and we're pulling out of Algeria. And you mustn't be angry at De Gaulle when he keeps bugging the United States and saying France is the greatest power in the world, etc. He knows France is not the greatest power in the world. He knows that France is nothing grandeur. All he's trying to do is to bring back a little self-respect to the French man. He knows perfectly well what he's doing. For his country, he's a noble and thoughtful statesman who knows that a lot has been lost, and it's possible to retrieve some by talking about France's past glory and possible future glory. But it's the same kind of thing in Vietnam. We're fighting in Vietnam for various prosaic reasons. Eisenhower at a governor's conference in 1953 was asked about the French fighting in Indochina by the governors. What do you think about this? And Eisenhower, with his usual frankness, the way the truth just flopped out of his mouth before he could stop it, he said, well, if we lose in Indochina, it's a bad thing, because a third of the world's tungsten and tin is in South Vietnam, and we've got to save that for the West. Now, that's not mentioned by our leader. And we're also there because, from Johnson's point of view, the white men have always had a right, which we have to preserve, of telling the yellow nations what to do. He is fighting for rights, but that's the right that he's fighting for. That's another right that's over. It's finished. The yellow people are going to decide for themselves what they want to do. We're also there because we want to preserve some part of Asia as a field for investment of American capital when it's all over. That's another position. But there are also psychic reasons which we don't understand. And this is what is scary about this war as compared to the last war. When we knew exactly what we were doing, and people would work overtime in the factories, they would gladly sacrifice themselves because they knew perfectly well there weren't any psychic undercurrents of doubt. But the whole war is shot with these doubts. And the New York Times recently was the only newspaper who printed the fact when they were talking about the shortage of pilots in Vietnam. The New York Times is the only one that published the fact that a contributing factor is that many of the pilots that are brought there turn in their wings rather than fly in the war. Once they fly there, they're taught to run these $3 million machines, and they're said, now you're going to do something noble, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And what are they sent over with? A bunch of napalm to bomb a village of women and children. And they come home and they say, look, this isn't the way that I thought about it when I was in New York, haven't I? And they turn in their wings. They say, okay, forget it. I'll be a commercial pilot somewhere. So, believe me, it isn't only the poets, it isn't only Fulbright who has doubts. Everyone has doubts. And the problem is that there's something invisible about the war. So here's a little poem touching on that called As the Asian War Begins. There are things that cannot be seen, or are seen only by a minister who no longer believes in God, living in his parish like a crow in its nest. There are flowers with murky centers, impenetrable, ebony, basalt. There are Conestoga wagons, the contents hidden from us by canvas, murderers riding under the canvas. Give us this day a glimpse of what is hidden, of our enemies, the soldiers, and the poor.